Welcome to Chatting with CHA, a series featuring interviews with CHA's industry thought leaders. I'm Adria Campbell, Marketing Communications Specialist. Protecting public health is a top priority, and CHA has decades of experience developing solutions for emerging contaminants such as per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, otherwise known as PFAS, and the challenges that they bring. So given the evolving nature of synthetic chemical issues, it's crucial to remain current with regulations to safeguard the environment and our communities. So with that, I have three of our experts here today to provide an overview of PFAS management issues. I'm pleased to introduce Aziz Ahmed, Water Resources Chief Engineer, Dr. Robert Reese, Project Team Leader, and Scott Smith, Chief Engineer for our Environmental and Sustainability Group. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you for having us. Good morning.
Of course. So let's just jump right in. Robert, can you give us an idea of the breadth of water treatment challenges that clients face today, specifically with harmful chemicals such as PFAS?
Sure. You know, the need for water treatment and the challenges and addressing those start from the source water all the way through treatment and into the distribution system. From a source water standpoint, whether it's naturally occurring constituents or as you note, harmful chemicals that get introduced. Those can be trace contaminants. In many instances, the United States Environmental Protection Agency looks at those through the context of their contaminants of emerging concern, a list that they maintain and research that they continue to perform relative to epidemiology and which ones are the highest priority to add regulations to. In this instance, relative to PFAS, EPA did, and the federal government last week noted, provide notice and announcement of intent to decrease the allowable concentration of PFAS. And as that legislation moves through, the need for supporting our clients and providing potentially improvements if they have a contamination issue have increased because of that strict levels that EPA is now proposing. Relative to the actual methods of treatment that are available to us, there's a lot of choices out there, which is the good news, right? PFAS is a constituent that does not degrade in nature quickly. So we've got issues with that. Pesticides are another example, slow degradation chemicals in many instances. The low molecular weight carbon chains can be challenged to break or dissolve. And so when we look at the treatment side of things, we have ion exchanges is a great adsorptive process that can address low molecular weight constituents, granular activated carbon, again, another adsorptive process. Research has been done into combining UV treatment with ozonation to enhance the ozonation process. And then membrane technologies, low pressure reverse osmosis, for example, very effective for removing contaminants of emerging concern, including PFAS. So we've got tools in the toolbox, and depending on the situation, whether it's an environmental remediation directly in the groundwater, or it could potentially be in a surface water, or in a municipal drinking water application, there's a lot of ways that we can address the challenge and meet the needs of our clients.
Thank you, Robert. And speaking of treatment plants, would you be able to give a few examples of water treatment plant design projects that our water team has been involved in?
Sure. One great example is Seminole County in the northern portion of the greater Orlando metropolitan area has existing water treatment plants that they proposed to have upgraded to address emerging regulations. And we had the opportunity to do that for them. That included evaluating treatment technologies, pilot testing, design, and construction. And in that instance, we selected ion exchange followed by granular activated carbon, and that was on the order of about 20 million gallon per day improvement between the three facilities. And that's a perfect example of where you have an existing treatment plant and you're able to add a unit process to enhance and improve the level of treatment that's being provided. And it's been an excellent solution for them, high quality water, both from a regulatory compliance standpoint and a customer satisfaction standpoint. Another example is Polk County between Tampa and Orlando. With Polk County, the water treatment plant we designed for them was greenfield. It was no existing facility there, so straight from scratch. In that instance, that was a 4 million gallon per day facility. We also picked ozonation followed by granular activated carbon adsorption. Great quality water coming out. It's won drinking water contests in the past. We've also completed ion exchange water treatment plant design using fluidized bed ion exchange adsorption. We've completed multiple projects using membrane technologies, both nanofiltration, low pressure reverse osmosis, microfiltration, and certainly in the case of trace contaminants like PFAS, it would be potentially low pressure RO to be able to provide the rejection and the level of removal that is required. So we've got choices, we've got options, and the great news with the CHA water team is we also have the experience in doing so to be able to deliver for our clients.
That's great, and definitely a diverse group of projects. So Scott, as experts in the water environment industry, how can we help our clients in the public and private sectors?
So with PFAS becoming discovered in an increasing number of places, we can really assist all of our clients addressing their PFAS issues, whether, you know, they operate a water or wastewater treatment plant, a landfill, an airport, or even on land where biosolids have been applied. You know, we can really help all of our clients through the process. Specifically, you know, we can assist with source identification and helping our clients understand that the scale of the PFAS problem that they have, and really help with the development and implementation of a sampling and analysis plan. And that can cover all sorts of different media, whether it's water, soil, surface water. You know, we've had experience on over a dozen different projects at this point. And once the problem's characterized and we understand the site-specific information, we can really help our clients with doing an evaluation and the selection of a remedy.
Hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
CHA Consulting, Inc. is an innovative engineering design, consulting, and construction management firm delivering sustainable, integrated solutions to the world's most challenging infrastructure projects. With decades of experience, we bring inspired talent, forward-leaning technology, and essential partnerships to meet our clients' evolving needs. We are your trusted advisors and partners, committed to responsibly improving the world we live in. CHA serves as your single point of contact from start to finish, utilizing technology advancements and adapting teams, schedules, budgets, and services to each unique challenge. Our client focus is driven by trust and collaboration. We study, design, manage, and build projects that enhance our communities and our world. Learn more at chacompanies.com or find CHA Companies on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Welcome back to part two of our discussion on PFAS with Dr. Robert Reese, Scott Smith, and Aziz Ahmed. Thanks, Scott. And you mentioned a sampling and analysis plan. Would you be able to describe the initial source identification, sampling and analysis process if a client finds PFAS in their system or at their site?
Sure. So as part of the site characterization process, you know, the first step that we usually take is kind of doing a qualitative evaluation of what the potential source might be. And, you know, some of the questions we ask ourselves is, you know, first, is the PFAS contamination known, or is it just suspected at that time? And what is the nature of, you know, the contamination or the potential source? You know, are we talking about a water treatment plant, a wastewater treatment plant that, you know, receives industrial discharges? Are we talking about private drinking water wells? Are we talking about an airport or a facility that might have had a fire suppression system? You know, just trying to educate ourselves on what the suspect source might be. Then once we've completed that evaluation, you know, we would work with our clients to develop a sampling and analysis plan where we would go out and take additional samples to collect more data to help us better characterize the site. And then once we have done that, we can compare to the applicable standards and guidance value, which if folks are watching the news, you know, that's changing every day. You know, different jurisdictions have come up with a lot of different numbers. So it's really important that you stay up to speed with the different regulations and what apply in your case. And then if the PFAS requires treatment, you know, you're above an action level and you need to do something about it, we can help our clients come up with the most cost-effective solutions for their specific situation. Sometimes we can do that through pilot studies and bench scale studies, you know, to really look at different options and what's going to be best for the specific situation they're faced with. You know, Robert talked about a lot of the options on the water side. A lot of those same technologies would be applied for groundwater cleanup if necessary. On the soil side, you know, some of the things that we look at is doing things like injecting activated carbon. A lot of times we can absorb that material and hold it in place. There's been some work with using what we call modified clay absorption, and we can put in down gradient reactive barriers to capture things from leaving a site. We've had success with in situ soil stabilization projects where we actually mix in those clays with soil blending techniques. There's also technologies out there with thermal destruction has been pretty successful. You know, that can be pretty energy intensive, but that's also a very viable option at this point.
Of course, and we often use a holistic approach to PFAS management. Aziz, can you help us understand what that might entail?
Sure. PFAS is a big concern for many of our clients. That includes utilities, municipalities, and like Scott mentioned airports, industries, and others. I'm going to mention only a few issues that an owner will face if PFAS is found in his or her system. So EPA is still evaluating the health impacts of most of the more than hundreds of PFAS chemicals. Only three of these chemicals are getting MCLs, or as of last week, it's more than three, it's like six of the chemicals. But there has been a myriad of information out there that can overwhelm a utility or site manager. Different states have and will have different MCLs. Applicable remediation or treatment technology will depend on contaminated sources' unique water quality and environmental conditions. Finding the right cost-effective technology for remedial actions and securing federal and state funding are areas where a manager will need help. Also, once found at a source, PFAS can create customer inquiry and backlash, regulatory oversights, and media attention. Doing it haphazardly in a piecemeal setup will only create more confusion and can cause reasons for inefficient handling of the situation. So a holistic approach will help the owner to manage the PFAS issue from the beginning, which is finding PFAS at the source, to installing remediation measures to the satisfaction of the regulatory agencies. One team managing the investigation, engineering solutions, and stakeholder inquiries and involvement will be more efficient and more cost-effective.
So then switching gears, as we look toward the future, Aziz, can you also tell us what clients should be doing now to comply with current and future legislation?
As the regulations are still evolving and there are conflicting and confusing information available out there, the first step our clients should do is to become familiar to the changes in regulation, both federal and state. CHA, as a trusted consultant, can help in synthesizing this knowledge. Some simplified recommended steps that our clients can use to effectively manage the PFAS issues now include, number one, understand the rules, federal and state, and keep track of the changes. Number two, if rule mandates sampling the sources, start sampling and analysis to determine existence of PFAS constituents. There may be funding available at state and federal levels to conduct such analysis. Number three, understand the funding sources and funding application process. Get help from the experts to develop a plan for funding potential PFAS investigation and remediation projects. And number four, engage a champion internally to tackle PFAS. This champion can work with the consultants like CHA to proactively develop a PFAS management plan. Like I mentioned in our first podcast, CHA can be the PFAS manager for a client and be the front face to tackle the technical and regulatory affairs related to PFAS.
Thank you, Aziz. That's all my questions for today. This has been an interesting discussion. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you, Adria. We appreciate the opportunity to discuss this evolving topic with you.
And if you want to make the most of your funding, have questions about the application process, or need help with your remediation strategy, I encourage you to reach out to Aziz, Robert, or Scott. Visit chacompanies.com under Changemakers for contact information along with this recording and other episodes of Chatting with CHA. And be sure to listen to part one of our PFAS series where we discuss some of the grant funding available to confront PFAS pollution. That's going to do it for us. We'll be chatting again soon.